July 5th, 1991. A wail, sudden enough to stop Muriel's heart, broke out from the booth across from her as she sat at the soda fountain counter. A black man in a full-length apron, probably the cook, had slid to his feet, and the prospect of his departure seemed to have freshened the anguish of the woman there. Dark and thin, she was melted against him. The younger man, with a glimmering stud in his ear, lingered behind the two haplessly. "The widow," whispered one of the techs, dusting the front case under the register. "She won't go home." The cook eased her over to the young fellow, who reluctantly raised an arm to her shoulder, while Mrs. Leonidas carried on fiercely. In one of those moments of cold-blooded clarity for which Muriel was already noted in the PA's office, she suddenly recognized that Gus's widow was going through the standard gestures of grief as she understood them. The crying, the shrieking, was her duty. A more genuine reaction to her husband's death, true mourning, or even relief, would come long from now, in private. Since the day she started as a prosecutor, Muriel had had an instinct for the survivors of violence. She was not sure how connected she'd been to her parents, or whether any man, including her dead husband, had ever mattered to the quick. But she cared for these victims with the radiant nuclear fury of the sun. When Mrs. Leonidas was again under some control, she marched past Muriel to the ladies. The young man who had escorted her halfway cast Muriel a sheepish look as the restroom door closed. "I can't talk to her," he explained. "My sisters are on the way from out of town. They'll get her out of here. Nobody listens to me." Soft-looking and skittish, the young man was balding early, and his hair was cropped as closely as an army recruit's. She asked if he, too, was related to Gus. "The sun," he said with gloomy emphasis. "The Greek sun." He found some bitter humor in what he had said. He introduced himself as John Leonidas and offered a clammy hand. When Muriel had responded with her name and job title, John said, "Thank God, that's what my ma's waiting for, to talk to the prosecutor." Then, with little warning, he began to cry. By the time John's mother emerged from the restroom, he had gathered himself. As he had predicted when he introduced Muriel as the prosecutor, Athena Leonidas, who only a moment before had been wilted by grief, stiffened to deliver her message. "They should be dead. I want them dead," she said. "The filth who did this, my Gus, dead with my own eyes. I will not sleep till I see." She dissolved again and fell upon her son, who, over his mother's shoulder, cast Muriel another bleak look. The detective commander, Harold Greer, appeared. He encouraged Mrs. Leonidas to go home, but it was Muriel he wanted. Greer introduced himself back in Gus's small office. "I've been waiting for somebody from the PA's office for 2 hours. Tommy Molto's nowhere to be found." Molto, the head of homicide, had recently regained his job in a civil suit after being fired for supposedly framing a defendant. No one yet knew quite what to make of Tommy. "Larry says you're smart." Muriel hitched a shoulder. "Consider the source." Sober by nature, Greer nonetheless managed a spirited laugh. "Well, if you're smart enough to get a search warrant on a holiday weekend, you're smart enough for me," said Greer. Muriel had no clue where she'd find a judge to sign a warrant at 4 p.m. Friday on a holiday weekend. When Harold left, she remained in the tiny office, feeling saddened by the proximity of Gus's personal things, while she phoned felony judges at home. Gillian Sullivan, Muriel's last choice, sounded as usual, well-sauced and sleepy, but she was available. Muriel headed for the office in the county building, where she'd have to type up the warrants herself. She was excited. In the PA's office, there was a standing rule. Once you touched a case, it was yours. Leaving, she found Larry on the pavement in front of the restaurant, holding off Stanley Rosenberg, the rodent-faced investigative reporter from Channel 5. Stanley kept wheedling, no matter how many times Larry told him to talk to Greer. And finally, Starchek, who generally had little use for journalists, simply turned away. "Fucking vulture," he said to Muriel, who walked beside him. Their cars were in the same direction. "So, Harold hired you?" Larry asked. You do good work, she said. They'd reached her Honda. She thanked Larry circumspectly and said, see ya. But he reached for her arm. He said, so who is it? When she finally caught the drift, she told him to forget it. Hey, you think I'm not going to hear? They went a few more rounds before she gave in. Talmadge, she said finally. Talmadge Lawman? Really, Larry, in your whole life, how many other people named Talmadge have you met? Talmadge, a former congressman and now a renowned business lawyer and lobbyist, had been their contracts professor when Larry and Muriel were in law school. 3 years ago, Talmadge's wife had died at 41 of breast cancer. Having shared a spouse's untimely death had drawn Muriel and him together. The relationship sparked, but it was off and on, which was how it always seemed to go with Muriel and men. Lately, though, they'd been gathering momentum. With both daughters in college now, Talmadge was tired of being alone, and Muriel enjoyed the force field around him. Epical events always seemed to be at hand when you were with Talmadge. You're really going to marry Talmadge Lawman? We're not getting married. I told you, I had a feeling this might, maybe, could, perhaps, probably not, lead to something. It's a million miles from that right now. I just wanted to give you the heads up about why I won't come running when you whistle. Whistle. Muriel enjoyed Larry's jaundiced humor and his equally sure sense of her. He was a big man, Polish and German in terms of his background, with innocent blue eyes, a big round face, and blondish hair he was starting to lose. Playing around with him was the kind of screwball whim that marked her earlier years when she thought it was a riot to be a wild child. But he was married, and a cop to the core. Now she told herself again what she told him. She had to move on.